You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. My guest this week is best known for his Tony Award-winning role as Dad in the hit musical Billy Elliot. Greg Jabara has starred in Damn Yankees, Victor Victoria, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Chicago, and many more. A familiar face in film and on television, he's currently filming his 12th season in his role as Garrett Moore on the hit CBS police drama Blue Bloods. A passionate advocate for a number of causes, Greg has spent the pandemic raising funds for amazing organizations like the Actors Fund, Broadway Cares, SAY, Charleston Playhouse, The Blank Theater, The Great Cycle Challenge, just to name a few. I'm so thrilled to have him here today. Greg, welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
Hi, Jan.
It's nice to see you on a Zoom anyway, and not on Facebook.
I know, right?
You've been in so many films and TV shows, not to mention all the theater you've done, and most people would recognize your face. But I would love for our listeners to get to know you, the person, a little better. So do you mind if I ask you a few sort of rapid-fire personal questions?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's do this. If you had to choose three adjectives to describe yourself, what would you say?
Oh, my goodness. A Libra. For sure, even balanced, three adjectives. A listener, that's not an adjective. And non-judgmental, is that an adjective?
It works for me. What do you most give a damn about?
Probably that my wife feels successful and that my two sons have the tools to also be successful in life. I think that's the most important thing.
What dream have you yet to achieve?
I kind of checked all the boxes. I gratefully feel incredibly validated both professionally and personally. I don't have any wants like that. I'm grateful for all the things as they come, but I'm pretty happy.
That is so nice. Not everybody says that. speaking of gratitude, I was going to ask you, what are you most grateful for today?
Well, that we get to do this.
Yay.
You know, because it's, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily that I feel I have something to offer as much as I know that I'll come away from this probably enlightened and motivated personally. So, this is a great gift to do something like this with you.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. And we're looking forward to being motivated by you because you are so inspirational. So let's talk about some things here. I want to start off, obviously, this is a Broadway-related podcast, so I would be remiss if I didn't start off talking about your stage career. Damn Yankees, Victor Victoria, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Chicago, and of course, Billy Elliot for, you know, you won the Tony Award and in 2009. And I wondered, that role of dad, what did that mean to you during the run of the show? And what does that role continue to mean for you in your career?
Interesting, because when I first saw the movie, I identified with Billy, with the role of Billy Elliot, the son, as an artist in a working class environment. That's how the film affected me. And then when it came time to actually pursue the job, and I had to pursue the job because they weren't interested in me for the role, curiously, I really identified with the dad, having been a little further along as a parent myself and appreciating all that my own father went through. So it was a tribute to my father in terms of understanding and honoring many of the struggles that he went through, I think, with all of the siblings in my family, because we all chose professions that were outside of the working class realm that he knew. And also we had lifestyle choices that also challenged him. So it was really an homage to my dad. And the best thing was, several cousins who came and saw the show would always go, "Wow, those are our dads. You've put our dads up on stage." And it was like, and that gave me great joy.
You know, in the theater, that role was such an iconic role for you. And a lot of people kind of get stuck in one specific role, but not you. You've managed to sort of, you know, do so many types of roles and so many genres and so many mediums, you know, like film, television, and theater. So, you know, it's interesting because I always relate to you. Like, the first thing, if somebody says your name, I think of that role, but then there's so much more to it, which kind of leads to Blue Bloods. Now, I have to confess, I'm not a big crime police drama watcher, but my Glenn's father is. So we've been watching a lot of Blue Bloods.
Oh, thank Glenn's dad for me, please, for my job security.
Loves that show.
That's great.
So you're in the middle of filming season 12, and congrats.
Thank you.
I understand that you've become kind of an unintentional law enforcement advocate, and you're an honorary FBI LEADA member as a result of your work on the show. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because before this job, I wouldn't have known myself. My father was an insurance claims adjuster. So, and he represented a lot of the law enforcement departments in the state of Michigan for, you know, insurance purposes. And the one thing my dad taught me was the respect for law enforcement. And it wasn't because, my family, we didn't have run-ins with the law, but my dad knew, the power they had and the necessity for what they did. So I always had a respect for law enforcement, but it was never like, you know, in the forefront of my consciousness and my daily life. It was just like, I mean, like any little kid, you'd see, you know, a police officer with a gun on his hip and you'd think, wow, that's a real gun. That's really cool. That's crazy. That's a police officer. That's really cool. But it wasn't a part of my life. Then I get in this TV show and you find out that there's the whole fraternity of law enforcement, of men and women, I should say, that they really appreciated the show because it showed a light on the genuine hardships of what it is to be in law enforcement. And then once I was in the show, and then I started hearing from the fans who are law enforcement officers, and then I became aware of how difficult a job that is, and especially in the last 12 years, just that I've been aware, if an officer is out to dinner or at a social gathering and they're not in uniform, and you ask them what they do for a living, they're reticent to say what it is because they're afraid of the judgment that may come. And that shouldn't be the case. Yes, there are law enforcement officers that have gone astray and who have broken the law and who shouldn't be in the position that they are. But we need cops. And I never knew that. I was never aware of how vital they were in terms of just so that we could all do the things that we know that we appreciate and love and in our world, and yet how difficult a job that is. So because of the show, I became a member. Well, I started, I got an invite to attend the FBI LEDA. FBI LEEDA is the education arm of the FBI. And what they do is they teach the upper levels of law enforcement all around the world all the things that they've learned about law enforcement and share all their knowledge to help better law enforcement. And they do a national convention. And I was asked 1 year to attend just to be a face, because they love the show. And it would be great to go in Gladhand and press flesh. And I went, yeah, I'll do that, because I started to understand how hard it was for law enforcement to keep their morale up, because it was really, it has become incredibly difficult for law enforcement. So I went, and then after, I started going every year because it meant so much to them. And I was grateful to remind those who are really good cops how vital they are and how much they're needed so that they don't give up. And that was the role that I enjoyed taking on, which was to be an advocate for law enforcement, to encourage those who do good to continue doing good and not saying, wow, people don't get it, there's a lot of hate, and my life's at risk, and I want to go home to my wife and kids, mm-hmm. so I'm going to stop being a cop. And it's like, that's a terrifying concept for the good cops, to me. And so my energies are just to remind those who really are vital to please stay the course.
And particularly in the last 18 months, this has been a really important topic of discussion. So,
the thing is, as I started learning the history of law enforcement, it's actually a never ending struggle for police officers. There's always some faction of society that is not a fan, and they're outspoken and they're dangerous. And thank God that the cops that are still there want to still do their job, because we need them. They're doing something I don't have the courage to do. We need them, and we need the good ones. So I'll do whatever I can to help them, to help remind them how vital they are.
And that's a perfect example of why we needed you on this podcast, because you take your art and you make your art meaningful in a way that, you know, resonates with society. So thank you for that. You said that you had to manage your survivor's guilt with Viacom CBS, trying to figure out a way for Blue Bloods to resume production when Broadway couldn't, and that you had to kind of reconcile this in your head that you were a working actor when so many people on the Broadway stages were not at that time in the past, you know, 18 months. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I get to commute. I live in LA. We shoot the show in New York, and I had just flown back home, and we were planning my transportation to return for the next episode. And then an email came out to everybody that just said, we're done. And at first it was, hey, we're going to work this out. We expect to be back as soon as we, you know, work out the kinks. And that was like, we're getting an email like once a week. Then it was once a month from, you know, production. And then it wasn't happening. And it was like, oh, okay. And we all sort of in the universe kind of went, we're shut down. But when Viacom CBS and our actors union and all of the health departments in the country figured out what it would take so that we could go back to work, and we did. Although it was literally like working in an infectious disease laboratory, what went away was the socialization of the work. But I was back to work. It was very different, but I had a job, and I came back to New York City in October of last year. And I walked through Times Square as the sun was going down on a Friday. And for the first time in my life, I felt unsafe because everything was closed. And when I moved to New York in 1982, walking through Times Square was a dicey proposition. Mm-hmm. And for a Michigander with wide eyes, it was kind of thrilling. You're a little reckless perhaps, but you know, but I hadn't felt that unsafe since 1982, and realized not just the Broadway community, but New York City as a whole had its knees, you know, legs taken out from under it. And it broke my heart. The institutions that closed, the restaurants that were gone, every hotel, every theater was dark. And yet I had a job. And because of social networking, I was aware of all my friends and colleagues who were, most, many had to leave New York City, move out of New York and go back to their hometowns to stay with mom and dad, and or because New York City was, you know, untenable. You couldn't, if without a job, you can't afford to be here. And here I was working, albeit I did, since for the first time since Billy Elliot, I had to live here full time. I was not allowed to commute, but I was grateful for that. I was away from my wife and kids, but I had a job. Hmm. And yet the majority of, of my friends from my stage career since 1986, nobody had a gig. The only upside was, of course, that all the guest stars who usually weren't available because they were doing Broadway shows, mm-hmm. were suddenly guesting on all our episodes. It was like, oh man, we get all this great talent on the show. And they were grateful, you know, for the gig. But each time a phenomenal stage artist was on our show, I would go, we would love to just have you all stay, let's just employ everybody. But we didn't even have, we went from shooting scenes in the commissioner's office on a soundstage with three cameras and three crew members per camera to shooting with two robotic cameras. Mm. And we were four actors, like if it's Abby, Bob, Tom, and me in that office, there's only one other person in that entire room last season. And that was the poor, unfortunate boom mic operator who was in a hazmat outfit. He was like sweating because he had 10 layers of, you know, anti-contagion clothing. And he's, you know, holding the thing, the boom mic, and everybody else. And there was no other human being. And we never saw another human being either. It was strange. I wish we could keep hiring all those more of the Broadway actors on our show, because I felt guilty that I had a gig and they didn't.
I mean, we've been through such strange times, but now Broadway's open again and hopefully things will be safe and we'll learn to be flexible flyers and pivot when we need to and make it work. But speaking
of, I think it's doable.
Yeah, I do too. I think that everybody just has to adjust their, you know, their business models a little bit.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Speaking of the pandemic, you said that you accidentally became the COVID virtual face for the Emergency Medicine Foundation fundraising. And I think you said, didn't you co-produce their gala?
Yeah.
What do you mean by accidentally?
There was a musical that was about to go into workshop, and the writers of this show, whose workshop was canceled because of COVID, they had an anthemic, you know, ballad that they thought would be great to support the frontline workers in the hospitals, you know, medical people. And so they decided, let's do a music video and do it just as a we'll do it as a fundraiser to raise money for EMF and ASAP. Stephen D'Angelo was doing the casting on that. And he reached out to, you know, all of his singing actor friends and said, hey, do you want to do this video? And I said, yeah, I'm in. I'm doing nothing. This is before the show came back. And I, you know, they got about, I don't know, 30 or 40 actors to all home record, home video record, home audio record. And they built this, you know, this video that was wonderful. And then they said, we're curious, will you reach out to Greg Chaparro and find out if he'd be interested in helping us with, we're thinking of doing a virtual auction this year instead of our in-person. I said, yeah, I can do this. Of course, I need something to focus on because I wasn't a working actor. And we didn't know when we were coming back. Blue Bloods was still closed. And then it was successful. They raised a lot of money. And then they said, we want to do a virtual gala for all the big donors who gave a lot of money. And I said, I'm in, I'll do it. You bet. And I drafted about 20 different, you know, sound bites of just a little something, pick one you like. You don't have to be, you can not be wearing pants like me right now. And all you got to do, you don't have to even be bathed. We just want you to say, hey, thank you, you know, for doing what you do for EMF and ASAP. And, you know, everybody's at home, unbathed, unshaven, miserable, feeling insignificant. And everybody was so happy to contribute. So I ended up getting all these amazing little, just quick little video clips that they were able to build an entire evening out of. And they thought I was like, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. And all it was me just asking. Everybody stepped up, and it was, and they ended up having a lovely event. And we did it for all the, you know, all the nurses and doctors that have been working so hard since, you said it was March of 2020. I feel like it was longer. It feels so much longer. Yeah.
It feels longer, but it also feels like it was just yesterday too. In my head, it's kind of like this weird split screen. But
agreed.
But you know, you and I have worked together on some in-person auctions when for Charity Buzz at the Charity Network, where I work on my day job. Yeah. And as I mentioned in the intro, you have been a passionate advocate for a lot of different organizations. And I just wondered, you know, some of them obviously make sense because they're connected to Blue Bloods, and you know, you feel passionate about those. But you know, are there certain organizations that you feel like these are really important to me, and or certain causes that are important to you, and why do you support those?
Until something, you know, is in front of me, I'm not like seeking out. When I first moved to Los Angeles, the Blank Theater Company, it was like this was a theater that actually kept my soul alive when I was first struggling and starting in 98 in Los Angeles, trying to make enough money to feed my family. I now have financial resources that I can help keep that theater alive, because they really kept my soul alive when it during a hardship and genuine hardship, when there was literally very little money coming in and not a lot of TV and film jobs. But I was doing probably some of the most gratifying work still on stage, but in Los Angeles. So I said, yes, I'm an advocate for you. You're important. You saved my life. Please let me be there. But there are organizations like Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. When I got introduced to this community that was doing great things and felt wonderfully validated and was raising money to help, you know, a debilitating disease that was, you know, that decimated the entertainment industry, especially in the 80s. But like that was because of the theater community. And I actually always say that the Broadway community, I just took it for granted that, you know, you just 100 posters would show up backstage and everybody would just with 30 Sharpies, and you didn't think twice. Everybody just went and you took whatever spare time you went and you signed them all. Mm-hmm. And then if you had to be out in front holding a red bucket, you just did it. And moving from the theater community to this TV world, they weren't used to.
Yeah.
It's not the same. And there's so much red tape and like insurance concerns and, you know, people that aren't supposed to be. So I went from, and the doorman, especially at the Imperial, because that was my last two jobs, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Billy Elliot. They knew they were going to be staying late every night because Jabara was going to have somebody backstage. He's going to take some unsuspecting family or friends of his and show them, you know, or it was going to be somebody who donated a ridiculous amount of money to Broadway Cares. And I said, I will happily give them the backstage tour. That's the least I can do. And you realize that, oh, there are actually a lot of other people that ended up supporting me doing that. But then, you know, the doorman ended up getting some really spectacular bottles of bourbon in thanks, which is a small price to pay for me in order to, but when we went to, once we got to TV land, and then like, I just started doing it on my own. And then like the higher ups, you know, executive producers, production coordinators are going, you know, you probably, if you're going to do that, you kind of just do it on your own. Don't tell me, because we really can't legally, you know, for insurance purposes, we really can't be doing these things. So I didn't realize how wonderful it was to be able to be in 8 shows a week so that you could do good outside of your job. In the world of charity and special experiences, because it's not as easy to do with the TV schedule and the fact that I don't live here, and now especially with, you know, everything's gone away with
Now it's different
pandemic. Yeah.
But you know, I will say I contacted you whatever it was a couple of years ago, and we had a client who wanted to come set for Blue Bloods, and you responded in like, you know, minutes, and you were like, yes, what can I do? And that's just the kind of guy you are. So that's why it was important for me to have you on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was just, it was like, for me, that was just, that's what you do. You're a lucky actor. You have a job, and there's, and you can do, and someone asks you to do something. You go, I'm grateful. And so happily, what do you want? I'm in. And that, what's interesting is I think that's sort of a stage actor thing, a New York theater community thing, not necessarily, you know, industry wide, but, you know, people can be taught.
Right. You know, well, let me say this. First of all, not everybody says yes. Not everybody answers their email or their text and says yes. You did, and you do. And that's why it's really important. And it's great to have you here. But also, I think, you know, you're right. When I decided to do this podcast, I wanted to focus on Broadway first because I do have experience in you know, both Hollywood and New York. And I feel the same way that Broadway is much, the idea of philanthropy or being of service is much more integrated into the Broadway community. Not that it doesn't happen in Hollywood, because it does,
right.
But in a different way. But this idea of philanthropy or social impact or charity or cause or social responsibility, whatever you want to call it, you've said something like earlier in this podcast a few times, you've talked about how it was validating for you and it made you feel good. And many people who've been guests on this podcast have had the same notion, and I feel the same way. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what that feeling is and why you do it. Do you come from a family of do-gooders? And I know that you've got an amazing wife and 2 sons. And I wondered if you and your wife integrate this concept of doing good into your family.
I can honestly say my 2 boys are very different human beings. And our eldest grew up backstage on Broadway. And I can honestly say he observed and retained what his dad did and had to do in order just to be an actor, that there's a selflessness. There is, you have to make yourself socially available to the people who are at the stage door, even though you really want to go home. He saw that and really, understood the value of kindness. But I didn't grow up in a family. I grew up in a big family. We were only 4 siblings, but my dad was the youngest of 13 surviving siblings on the Lebanese Catholic side. And my mom was one of 3 sisters in a much bigger Irish Catholic side. So, you know, we weren't like, you know, bleeding heart, you know, fight for the underdog kind of, you know, political activists, my family at all. We were just taking care of ourselves, but it was also, but that meant, you know, being a loving, caring part of community. But it was never, I really do think it was the theater community in New York that really amplified and helped me understand all the more that I could do. And it wasn't, and it wasn't difficult. It was just like, this is what we do. Get on board. And it was like, yeah, man, this is great.
We wondered if you were asked advice on how to practice doing good or creating a better world. What would you say to some of your fans?
I don't walk around with blinders on. I don't walk through the streets with earbuds in. I look up at the architecture. But it's not, that's not always when I'm in the city. I ride my bike through Los Angeles, and I like to go by myself as opposed to with people because I take everything in. But you see opportunities to help. You know, there's simple things like a pylon that's in the street that could be problematic because it fell off of a truck, or, and you just go, oh, I could move that. Or someone's in, or a homeless person needs help pushing their big old shopping cart full of possessions up a ramp, and you get off your bike and go, here, I'll help you out. It's just sort of a thing I do. It's just always been what I do, but I don't think everybody does that. I think, you know, our world is kind of like, you know, it's becoming a little more myopic. Is that the right word? And audibly, visually, and there's really great benefit in just opening your ears and eyes and just looking at the world and going, oh, I could help them. And without any cost to you, you know, I think that's all my thing is. And I think that could be investigated by many.
I think those are really great words of wisdom and advice. And I think the idea of small random acts of kindness and just opening yourself up, right?
Yeah.
It's nice. All of your successes, they're so well-deserved, and you're such a great person and a great human being. And I really appreciate you being on this podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you, including me, Jan.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast. And on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.